When I ask a question, you will respond at once. You will not hesitate. You will not consider. You will not lie. Cooperation will be rewarded. Resistance will be punished.
The truth is fluid. The truth is subjective. Out there, it doesn't matter what time it is. In here, it's lunchtime, if you and I decide that it is. The truth is sometimes what you believe it to be, and other times what you decide it to be.
I'm afraid. I've never been afraid before.
You're all afraid. But can you win? Every time I say no.
Sheridan's caught in a game of mind warfare.
Even you can be broken.
No!
And if he loses, the rebellion will be destroyed.
You cannot resist.
On an all-new Babylon 5.
You have transmissions holding.
Batch incoming signal. Full audio and video decode.
Purple files accessed.
What you are about to see has never been shown to anyone outside the Break House.
Out there in podcast land, welcome to Grade 17, a Babylon 5 podcast, a part of the Front Row Network and NPR Illinois Community Voices. We're a group of newbies watching Babylon 5 for the very first time, along with a group of first ones who have been watching Babylon 5 far too long. And we are here today to talk about intersections in real time from season 4. I'm Scott, and with me is
Emily,
Blake,
Mike,
Justin,
Nicole,
and Kevin.
And before we get started, a reminder, as always, please, please, please like, subscribe, follow, do whatever the buttons tell you can do on your app. If you're listening to our podcast, we do have a YouTube channel. And if you're listening on YouTube, we do have a podcast. So check all the links down below. We also are active on social medias, including Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and we do have our Patreon Discord. So anyone who signs up for our Patreon does get access to our Discord as well. And a big thank you to all of our Grey Council members. Those are the ones listed down below as producers who provide the largest donation every single week to keep our show going. And I am going to make a selfish plea that you check out our YouTube channel. For some reason, the YouTube monster has kicked our ass and we are not getting picked up by the algorithm at all anymore. So go over there, click the like, subscribe, notify button, and check us out there. We will be doing a lot of different stuff. And in fact, we're almost done with season 4. So our season 4 recap show, which will be a live show, will be coming up here in a few weeks. So be sure to check out our YouTube and subscribe for that. So you'll be able to, I don't know, talk to us live and watch us fail miserably. It's always fun. It's great. But before we get there, we've got a few more episodes of season 4 to go. And finally, please be sure to leave a review. We can take reviews on Spotify, Audible, or Apple, and Apple is obviously the one that we really need your help on because that's where most people get their podcasts still. And we did get a new review in. This comes from Attack Womble, and that review says, "Great podcast for newbies and first ones. I love the dynamic between the first ones and the newbies. Their predictions always entertain, as does the glee with which the first ones talk beyond the rim about what they have coming. You can almost hear them chomping at the bit to say something. As a longtime B5 fan, I'm in the same boat. Keep up the good work." And that is, again, Attack Womble from the United Kingdom. So thank you, Attack. And you can leave your review on any of those areas, and it really does help us grow. Okay. Well,
I just Googled what a womble is, and you, sir, are disgusted. I didn't actually Google it.
It was the little tied-off bit of a balloon.
What?
I always called that a doogie.
Okay, there's a video and it's hilarious and there's water balloons and they get attacked by
a
squirrel.
I was told, since Blake hosted last week, that it was a much more structured episode. And people pointed out that when I'm hosting, we're not as structured. So let's fucking stop talking about balloons and move into the goddamn episode.
Oh, so that's his way of structuring as he yells at us. Okay,
I can bring out the dad voice, Kevin, if I need to.
That wasn't your
dad voice. No, it was not.
Super serious.
No, we've heard his dad voice before. We've heard him scream at the kids multiple times on the show.
I don't like your dad voice. Keep it to yourself.
Wombles are fictional, pointy-nosed, furry creatures.
Oh.
So let's go ahead and dive in to intersections in real time. And Mike, you have a synopsis for us.
This week on Babylon 5, JMS wastes everybody's damn time.
God damn it, Mike.
That was good.
No, it's not.
A man ate a sandwich with the wrong kind of mustard.
Okay, you know what? Before you all hate, drop off the podcast that's listening to this right now. I want you to know this is my favorite fucking episode of season 4. So we will defend this episode. Don't worry.
Wow.
Don't worry.
Are we going to talk about corned beef sandwiches at some point? Because I have thoughts.
Yes, and Mike and Emily are wrong, and corned beef is great, but we'll get into it. So before you hate, check out.
All right, here.
Sure. No, you're fine, Mike. Everyone knows.
I'll do it again.
You sit there in your wrongness, and you like it. It's fine. Oh, and I have thunder now too, Kevin, so this is going to be fun. Okay.
This episode was stupid. I'm mad about it.
So now Emily and Mike are both wrong on this episode. Let's go ahead and hear from our newbies and their first impressions. For those of you who are just joining us, our newbies have not watched anything past this episode. So we're going to get their first impressions. We're going to dive into the episode and discuss it. And then at the end, we'll get their predictions about what they think is going to happen next. And then we will tell the rest of you who want to stick around after they leave why their predictions are terribly wrong in our Beyond the Rim segment. So, newbies, let's go to Justin first. First impressions on intersections in real time.
To quote the great philosopher Emily, I didn't hate it. Honestly, I enjoy as much as you can enjoy a torture episode. I actually, to me, it gave off really good Twilight Zone vibes. Like, to me, I was thinking about the Obsolete Man episode specifically.
Obsolete.
Even though two completely different stories, the feel of the episode was the same. And I think that's kind of why I liked it maybe more than other people here tonight. But as much as I've smacked down on episodes that feel different in the past, this one, it seemed to kind of fit as to where it doesn't really feel like it's part of the overall vibe of Babylon 5. And it's something that can easily sit off out on its own as some kind of story in a different series, which I kind of liked it for this one. I've got a lot of thoughts about corned beef sandwiches that we'll get to later, but overall, I give this episode a B. Not my favorite episode of the season by far, but I honestly liked it a lot more than I thought I was going to.
Nicole, first impression.
Well, usually I'm always the one that's like, it wasn't bad, guys, and find the silver lining. But to be honest, this was not my favorite episode. I was a little apprehensive to watch it from the beginning. I don't really do well with like the tortury type stuff. So it wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. So that was good. It was nothing wrong with like the story or the show, but like, it's just not my kind of, I don't like those kind of TV shows, movies, whatever. I didn't like it. And that's just more of a personal preference as opposed to acting quality, storyline, anything like that. It was just more of a personal thing. Also, the torturing guy or whatever, the guy who was an interrogator, he reminded me of the dad from Step Brothers. So I just kept calling him Doback in my head. Every time he was on the screen, he looked like him and he looked familiar. Maybe obviously it wasn't that guy, but he looked familiar and he reminded me of him. So I couldn't take him seriously because I kept thinking of, you know, the movie Step Brothers. So anyway, that was another issue I had. But overall, I mean, hats off to Boxleitner because what a badass. He just kept saying no. And when he spit on the paper, I was like, yes, you know, and turning the Drazi and changing his mind. And that was pretty cool. And it was just the psychological and like the playing with it. It was also a little hard for me to follow too. Again, it's just my personal preference and not my favorite type of thing to watch. So sorry, guys. I know that's probably not what you want to hear, but I wasn't a big fan of this one.
Nicole, what I appreciate about you, and I'm being legitimate here, is, you know, a lot of podcasts, they have like the, let's reference Star Trek. Let's reference other sci-fi. Your go-to was Step Brothers.
He looked like him. I couldn't help it. I just kept thinking, the liver spotted hands, don't put them on my mother, Doback. Like, that's all I kept thinking the whole time. So it was hard for me to take him seriously.
Speaking of hard to take people seriously, Emily, first impressions.
Fuck you, Scott. God, I did.
Yeah, this one was just so much Sheridan. Oh my God. We know how I feel about him. Not a fan. I mean, the acting, and it was fine. There was nothing wrong with the acting, but it was just like so much of him. And like, ugh. And honestly, the thought, for whatever reason, I've never actually eaten corned beef. It just sounds disgusting. So the continual discussion about like a sandwich, I'm like, that just sounds nasty. Did not help the situation.
That conversation was literally 2 minutes of the episode.
Yeah, well, it felt like way too much of it, okay? Like, this episode felt like it dragged on forever because it felt like essentially just the same thing constantly. Like, there wasn't enough
going. That is the point.
Yeah, it was a torture.
You was being tortured.
Yeah, and so were we by having to watch it.
There it is.
I mean, you're not wrong.
Okay. Jesus. This is not where I thought this night was going to go. I already know Mike can't fucking save this thing. So Mike, as the first one, what's your first impression?
I didn't like it. I will say that I thought all the acting and everything was fine, but like this episode is just unnecessary. It doesn't have anything particularly special to say as a message to the viewer, and it doesn't move the plot forward, I don't think. So Kevin's mind literally just exploded, so I can't wait to hear his opinion, but I just didn't feel like I got anything out of the end of this. Like,
I know we're like only 25 episodes away from being done with this show, but if you would like to apply to be a host on this show after this goddamn episode,
you know,
feel free, because we may need some replacements, because I have a feeling that the four of you that I'm looking at right now are going to be eviscerated in the comments, and I'm looking forward to it.
I still have positive things to say, so I have a feeling it'll be 50-50 on me.
Nicole, you always have. You can watch Two Guys in a Cup and have something positive to say.
It's Two Girls in a Cup, and I won't have anything positive to say about that.
What the fuck just happened?
Okay, Scott, that was your fault for taking it off the tracks like that.
Okay.
I thought the cinematography in that short was well done.
Did they share well?
Jesus, yeah. Christ. Okay, Kevin, I was seeing your reactions when you were talking to when Mike was talking. So please, for the love of God, have a good opinion.
Oh,
Kevin.
Oh my God. Like, how do you watch this episode and not come out of it as inspired by his strength, his ability to continually say no to the state, who is clearly trying to break him and get him to say that the last, you know, year and a half of his life has been a big old mistake. This episode says that if you just say no one more time, that you win, and maybe not against the state, but against yourself giving in. This episode has some of the best acting. And I realize it's just basically two guys. And there's a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff, which I won't get into now in first impressions, but it is a phenomenal episode. I really enjoy this one.
Blake, what do you got?
So I also really like this episode, but what I will comment on before I kind of get into my thoughts on it is this is probably one of the more controversial and divisive ones. This even came up when they did the P5 scale with the episode ratings. Is this episode, there's not really a middle. There's some very people who voted very high on it. There are people who completely voted very low on it, because this one really does kind of hit those polarizing opinions. And JMS himself even commented that this one was going to be a little bit of an experimental episode with each act. There's not really time jumps in it. I mean, it's basically the conversations, each act is taking place in real time, so that there's no cuts. It is the conversation that's happening there. The other thing to point out too is we've talked a little bit about some of the production, and this episode, if JMS would have known for sure at this time that season 5 was going to be a thing, this actually would have been the season finale of season 4. This would have been the cliffhanger at season 4 with Sheridan being held in Earth custody and interrogated. So for those of you that really hate it,
which this is the first time, Blake, that the newbies have actually heard that there may have not have been a season 5.
We've so, alluded to it, but yeah, there were some production issues at this point in time. That
kind of.
I, for one, am shocked and appalled.
This is your Kevin moment, Blake. Good job. Thank you. I'm off.
No, I mean, it's nowhere near as bad.
No, it is.
Let's not bring up the Kevin moment right now.
Oh, no, we're doing that next week.
moment. What the? I don't even know the Kevin moment. I wasn't there for it. Stop it.
And that's not really a spoiler. I mean, it's just production wise, it is what it is. And, you know, we've not commented on it throughout the season because we didn't want to comment. But now that we're close enough to the end, I mean, I think getting into some of that production piece, that this is actually where season four would have originally kind of ended and then carried forward into five. But I like this episode because we've seen that powers that Earth has with the telepaths, they could have very easily just reprogrammed Sheridan to go stand up there as a puppet and say whatever the hell they wanted him to say. But that would have been the easy way out. This episode gets into what they actually needed. They needed Sheridan to be broken and go out there and say what they wanted willingly. And to do that, they had to break him. And that's what this episode is really getting into the almost desperation that Earth needed to try to get control of the situation back. I think this shows Clark's desperation, actually, of how much they needed to get their narrative back out there, that they were the links they were to go to on it.
His desperation and his ignorance as a leader, which we've seen throughout the season too. He's pretty fucking bad at this job. As I said already, this is my favorite episode of season four. And I've alluded to this episode too, because I have been kind of dogging on Sheridan a lot in season four. And I have said a couple times that there's an episode coming where I think Sheridan will turn around for me. And this is it. This is the episode. And it does. Because I think in this episode, he is broken down to nothing. And he has to figure out where he's going to go from there. And what I really like about this episode, and I'm sure we'll talk about it, is he actually gives too much information at the beginning. He starts answering questions, and what you're told in the military is you don't answer any questions. You give name, rank, and serial number, and that's it. But he started answering questions, and then he realized, this guy's getting to me, and I have to figure out what to do to get back into a place where I'm in control. And to Kevin's point, all you have to do is keep saying no one more time. But the other thing I love about this episode is it doesn't have a happy ending, guys. And here's the other crazy thing. So Blake mentioned that this would have potentially been a season four cliffhanger. It kind of was, because the way Warner Brothers was releasing this thing, they really wanted it to fail. So this episode got released in July. The next episode, which we'll talk about next week, didn't come out until October. So you had to wait several months wondering what the hell is happening next with not only Sheridan, but everyone else. And so the fact that we get to watch it next week is a lot better than having to wait several months. The other thing too, Blake, to your point on the, and there's no middle ground in this episode as much as I'm giving everyone else shit, it is ranked in the P5 score the 43rd worst episode of all time and the 73rd. Best episode of all time. So it's basically, if you average that out, it's right smack dab in the middle. It's a P5 score of 8.08. So it's definitely, you know, a B episode for most people, like Justin said as well for him. But for me, it's an A plus. So let's go ahead and dive in. And with this one, guys, because we're really talking about a few people in a room the entire time, let's try to break this down by acts. So the first thing I want to kind of talk about is first interactions between William and Sheridan, and Emily, your sandwich is in there as well too. So let's just talk about how this thing starts off, and then we'll kind of go act by act as we discuss this sucker. Justin, what do you got?
In terms of the first act, the first thing that I kind of noticed throughout this particular part of the episode is how William, for one, the actor who plays William, his Nicole said that, you know, he looked familiar. He sounded like, I think I've heard his voice somewhere before, and I can't think of what it is to save my life. But William did a really good job of playing the good cop, bad cop kind of thing throughout the entire episode, where it's, and that's euphemism is if you can't win with the stick, then try the carrot. And he was trying to throw a lot of carrots Sheridan's way. I'm here for you. I'm here to, you know, first he's kind of nonchalant, really. I'm just here to do my job. I really don't care what happens to you one way or the other. But then he starts kind of dripping. I'm here for you. This is simple. All you have to do is cooperate. And then maybe I can demonstrate, you know, I'm the only ally that you have here. He did a really good job of kind of being one character, kind of swinging the bat from both sides of the plate in terms, I'm really here to help you, but also telling him, if you don't give me what I want to hear, bad shit's going to happen to you. And even throwing his father into the whole mix, just kind of pulling at his emotions like that. I disagree on the whole premise of what makes a good corned beef sandwich. And yes, we're going to go there now. Corned beef was handed down by God herself to take the form of a good Reuben.
Damn right.
Anytime I eat corned beef, it's got to be with Swiss cheese and brown mustard if I can't have a Reuben. But regular mustard, no. Brown mustard, Swiss cheese, toasted rye, done. So I don't think either one of them knows what a good corned beef sandwich is.
Justin, I have one correction. You're wrong on one part.
What?
Spicy brown mustard.
Well, yes. That's what I mean by brown mustard. Okay, yes.
Just making sure. The spicy
German brown mustard, yes. On it, yes.
As Sheridan said, the mustard was a little weak.
So maybe kind of Sheridan's more on our side, but...
Yeah.
One, I don't think really the whole sandwich was poisoned. I think William knew that his half wasn't, Sheridan's half was. And that's just to establish the control factor over the whole thing.
Here's a question for you, Justin, on that.
Yeah.
And I believe that he got sick. But here's the thing. He's wearing the exact same clothes when they come back in. And they said they took a while to clean up. But did he actually get sick? Or was he just programmed to feel sick?
Yeah, I was wondering.
Ooh, that's a good question.
He was completely clean, and it looks like he was wearing the same outfit. Now, they could have just, like, changed him. And there is a drain in the room, so.
I think very well, yeah, they could have forced him to change clothes, or whatever the case may be, and just put him in a new prisoner garb or whatever the hell he was wearing. But, I mean, but you can't psychologically make somebody think, I don't care. Now I'm questioning my own thing. Can you?
Here's what I'm getting at, Justin. You mentioned, too, the second day. We don't know this was the second day.
We really don't know. Yeah.
Because it's a cycle. For all we know, and I'm not trying to spoil anything because, honestly, we're not going to find out. But we have no idea how many times he's been in this cycle right now and how this has been going.
Well, and we don't know where he is either, because is he on Earth? Is he on Mars? Is he on a ship? Like, we have no idea.
All we know is he was captured on Mars. That's all we know.
Yeah, there's a lot of crazy mental tactics being employed throughout this episode, and we'll get into some of the other parts later on and the different acts, but the act one, I guess if you want to call it, was just the establishing of that dominance and that control.
Nicole?
I'd say for me, the only thing I really want to bring up about the first act is I really thought that the guy was kind of a sadistic asshole. I mean, I know that's the point. He's an interrogator and he's torturing him, but it reminded me very much of like a cat and mouse. Like he was taunting him. He was, you know, toying with him and just trying to break him. And, you know, I just thought off the get-go, from off the bat, I'm like, this guy is a sadistic asshole. Like he doesn't give a fuck and he's just gonna do what he's gonna do. And he even said that, I'm gonna do what I'm gonna do, you know. But I just thought he really played with Sheridan a little bit, and like I said, these kind of things are hard for me to watch and process, and I don't particularly like them. And I think it's because it made me feel uncomfortable, if that makes sense. Like it really, the way he was toying with him and the way he was so sadistic and just an ass and like nonchalant and like cruel. He did a great fucking job because he made me uncomfortable and it was difficult for me to watch. So that first act was really kind of getting over the hump until it kind of escalated, which I have a lot of thoughts for further down the road. I don't know if it's just not what I'm into or what, but like you got to give it up to the guy because he made me hate him off the bat. It was difficult for me to process and see what was happening, and just it was so apparent and that he was just toying and playing and just being a sadistic fuck, and I didn't like it.
Kevin.
So the thing about the guy that played William, you know, Ray Burke, is he wasn't who was originally cast for this part. They had somebody else who beat him out on the audition. And at the last possible second, the person that they had cast had to go back and do reshoots for Disney, I think it was. And because that contract took precedence, he had to pull out. So Ray Burke had impressed them at the audition. And so they called him. And the problem was he was doing an episode of Caroline in the City, if anyone remembers that show.
Yeah.
So,
great show.
Great show. That was a Tuesday. He was shooting that day and Wednesday, so he couldn't make it to the set till Thursday. And of course, you know, he really only had his lines from the audition memorized. So in between takes on Caroline in the City, he's having to learn his lines. Everyone was very supportive. They did everything they could to cobble it together. And I guess Copeland, the producer, looked at the dailies after the first day of shooting and says, yeah, we're fine. We can cobble it together, no problem. And so then they went into day two, and then they came back to do some, you know, reaction shots and first take and that kind of thing. I don't want to say it was rushed, but it was a little bit, especially for the actor that played William. And I think it's remarkable how well it came off. And I think the director does a remarkable job in this episode.
So let's move on. So the second quote unquote day or what have you, as we come back and we have Sheridan, who has emptied his pants and emptied his gut, supposedly, and dealing with a lot of different things that happen here, including, I believe this is when we first interact with the Drazi, which, by the way, anyone catch who the Drazi was? Like every Drazi every time on Babylon 5? Anybody? Bueller? Kevin knows, because Kevin's a nerd.
Right.
I know.
Was Wayne Alexander.
All the first up ones know.
I just think it's cool because, you know, they brought it kind of full circle.
There you go.
Wayne Alexander was the interrogator in season two. And so now he's in this episode, essentially another torture episode.
That was planned. JMS said it was nice and symmetrical in how he did that.
This is another example of where JMS, you know, a couple of times really wanted to do a basically two-actor show in a room. And the last couple of times he had planned to do it, he kind of chickened out of doing it. And then he was also going to chicken out on this one. And this episode ended up being 6 or 7 minutes over. And the next episode for something else that they had filmed was supposed to be included. And they took it out and put it in the next episode. JMS just decided it was the universe telling him to don't be a wuss and do what you wanted to do in the first place.
Wayne Alexander was Jack the Ripper, right?
Yep.
Yes.
He was okay. Jack.
When I was watching the credits, I saw that Wayne Alexander was in it, but I wasn't exactly sure what character he ended up being. So that makes a lot of sense now.
And Lorianne?
Yeah, Wayne Alexander is pretty much a main cast member. He is in everything. He plays Drazi.
Oh, he was Lorianne as well?
Yep.
Oh, no kidding. I forgot that. Okay.
He plays a lot of stuff. Nicole, what do you got?
Okay. My initial thought with the whole Drazi situation with Sheridan... So they're trying to break Sheridan, right? They're trying to get him to say that he, you know, make a confession and all this stuff, and trying to get him to name Ivanova and all of his people, and he's not going to do that. And when the Drazi comes in, my initial thought was watching that whole thing unfold and how the Drazi admits that he's afraid and this and that. I thought it was really cool because Sheridan was kind of, I don't want to say flexing because that's not what he was doing. I think it was a showcase and it was an example of how Sheridan can lead and influence and get people riled up in a good way. And like, do you know what I mean? Like he changed the Drazi's mind essentially by being encouraging and saying, you don't have to do this. You're strong. Like that was my first impression. I was like, that was a prime example of what they're trying to break him of, because Sheridan is a leader. Sheridan is the person who has rallied the troops. Sheridan's the person that is kind of leading this resistance, right? So I was like, damn, like he's literally showcasing what they're afraid of and what they want to change, right? So I was like, that was so cool to see him change that Drazi and like change his mind. And then he's like, I've no nothing else to say. And I just thought that was a great example of Sheridan's ability to be a leader and to be on the right side of things, right? And then, you know, the Drazi dies and all that. Obviously, Sheridan was upset about that. But then I got pissed because at the end, he resurfaces. And I was like, what the fuck? Like, it made me angry because that was such an awesome display of leadership and encouragement and an example of what Sheridan can do. And then it was all basically for nothing, essentially, you know? And
he was hallucinating the Drazi.
Oh, see, yeah, that's good too. I didn't think that. Oh, at the end he was hallucinating?
No, sorry.
Okay.
I usually it'd be like, it could be like, well, maybe, but JMS said the Drazi was there.
Yeah, so and basically he was in on it is what it comes down to.
And that's the point. To your point, Nicole, they wanted him to feel like every other time, oh, Sheridan's main power is bringing people together and to lead. Oh, by the way, that's a joke. We made you feel that way. Nothing you do here is going to matter.
That made me mad at the end when I saw the Drazi. It was like, oh, you just shattered my heart. Because it was like one of the things I liked the most about the episode was like that Sheridan-ness to...
And that was the point. So you do like the episode. Great. Excellent.
Well, I have some other positive things to say. So we'll get to it.
Justin.
Honestly, to Emily's point, when he showed up in that last scene as being the executioner, I wasn't 100% convinced because he was hallucinating Delenn as well at one point. So I wasn't 100% convinced the first time I watched it that he wasn't hallucinating the Drazi being there. It makes perfect sense that he was actually there, and it was all just part of this tactic by this fascist state in order to further whittle down Sheridan's very own sanity. And you saw this tactic on display when the Drazi sits there during his quote-unquote confession and names this Senator Fowler as being involved. And even Williams says, oh, I mean, we know Fowler didn't have anything to do with it, but he's just being really annoying to Clark, so we have to find a way to get rid of him. Like, that's a perfect Gestapo tactic. So that was one thing that really stuck out to me with that whole scene is, you know what, we're going to use this moment to try and, you know, clean up some other loose ends on our part. And that's why this whole senator was dropped into the whole thing to begin with.
Kevin.
JMS has degrees in clinical psychology and sociology, and he's also a student of, among other things, World War II. So when you say that, you know, the mental tactics that are on display in this episode, as gross as they are, do definitely have a basis to them. And, you know, you can study, mental brainwashing that's been done throughout history. He throws a lot of that into this episode. And I think that's part of what makes it so powerful is that it's rooted. JMS has always said about Babylon 5 that you can find light even in the darkest of rooms. And that's what he's always felt like was his, you know, overarching message of Babylon 5. And I think that's on display here, except for the end, as Scott pointed out, is not exactly a happy ending.
Nicole.
Well, and I think as the interrogation continued, it really showed how desperate Earth is, and with what they were doing and trying to do literally anything and everything they can to get him to break, because they know that there's no other way out of this. And they even said it themselves, they'd rather him be a symbol than a martyr, right? They wanted him to basically recant everything he said, say he was being controlled, and become a symbol. And he was like, what, so you can kill me? He's like, well, they won't be right away. You'll be free for a while, but they'll come eventually, kind of thing. So either way, he knew, like, I'm fucked regardless, and he stood his ground. And when he spit on the paper, I was like, oh, he is not gonna break. Like, he is done. Like, he is not doing it. And I thought that was pretty badass, because I feel like Italian culture, fun fact, if you spit on someone or at them, that is like the biggest, most worst insult that you can ever do. So for me, when he did that, I was like, oh, snap, because in my mind, that is like the biggest insult. Once that was established that he's not breaking, I thought their tactics got worse and worse. And it just showed the desperation that Earth had to break him. And then at the end, since Justin already went there, I'll just bring up what I was going to say. When it started all over again, I was just like, oh my God, this is like a bad episode of Groundhog Day. Like, this poor guy, you know what I mean? And I just wondered in my head, like, how long is he going to be able to sustain that will, you know? And how long is he going to be able to keep that gust? He even said to the guy, you think you're going to win? He says, every time I say no is a win. And it's like, I think, Kevin, you just said it. It's always looking at the light at the end of the tunnel, which is literally me in words. Like, I'm one of those eternal optimists, always looking for the silver lining, always looking for the light at the end of the tunnel. So for me, I was just like, oh, okay, when you said that, it kind of clicked in my brain.
Justin?
Well, and even though they said, William said that they want to use you as a symbol, and that's why they want to keep him alive, and that's why they want to get him to recant everything, as to me, it's not a symbol. They want to use him as an example. And even Williams says it straight there during the episode. They want to be able to parade you around and show that you can't beat the system. Then that's the whole philosophical question surrounding this episode is, what is truth? And there's a whole discussion throughout the whole episode about, is truth really a matter of perspective? And we've seen that a lot happen lately. And again, reason number 2495 of why Babylon 5 is relevant to things that happen even in today's culture, 30 some odd years later, about that.
Nicole.
Another thing too that I thought about, William kept asking about Ivanova and then was like, tell me who your Mars resistance leaders are, and like, tell me who your other contacts are. Like, not only were they trying to break him, but they were trying to get names of other people. And I feel like Sheridan knew that, like, he wasn't going to give anyone up, because I think Sheridan thinks he's a dead man either way. So not only is he going to resist and he is going to say no, he's not going to give up other people because he doesn't want them to be punished or kidnapped or what, or tortured or whatever. You know what I mean? And I think they know that he's loyal and he cares about his people. So they were using that as a tactic, because he kept asking about Ivanova, tell me her name, tell me this. Like, I think that they were really throwing everything they had at him, but I almost feel like maybe that was more initiative or fuel for him not to break, because he doesn't want to screw over his people that he cares about, which that could just be me thinking that, but I know that I know how loyal he is to Ivanova and everybody else that he is with, in cahoots with or whatever. And I don't think he's going to throw anyone under the bus. And if he would have did what they wanted and confessed and spoke about it, one, they probably would have killed him right away anyways. And two, they would have went after everybody else that was involved. And he is not stupid and he knows those things.
Couple things on that, Nicole. It's a tactic. And we've kind of talked about that. Kevin mentioned the sociology and psychology. The key is it's, you want to get somebody who you're trying to torture or gaslight or whatever you want to call it. You want them to say one little thing, because if you can get them to say one thing, even if it's innocuous, that means you've opened the floodgates to where the next thing may be a little too. And the next thing may be a little too. So he even says it, he's like, your commanding officer is Ivanova. We already know that. We just need to have it for our records.
Right.
And
right.
So he's saying, you know, this is nothing. You can tell me this. And that's what I kind of alluded to when I was talking originally before we started chatting about the episode, is actually Sheridan makes some mistakes in here too. He does answer some questions. He does answer yes and no to some things that he should not have done.
Right.
And that's the little prick that keeps opening up the wound to where next, okay, well, tell us something we already know and you already know we know. And then, okay, you've told us that. And so I see where you're coming from. But I don't think it's them throwing the kitchen sink at it. They're following legitimate tactics of what they should be doing here. As sick as it is, that's how you do it.
Right. I guess I'm not up to my torture knowledge, but I also assume that it was trying to get at him and eat at him, you know?
Oh, absolutely it is. It absolutely is. You're completely right on that. It's just, I think you're assuming, based on the fact that you don't like watching this stuff, that if he breaks right then, he doesn't break. And to Justin's point, my opinion on this is, and it's in my opinion on any time you have this kind of scene, episode, story, it doesn't have to be one situation. It doesn't have to be, okay, he spit on the confession, so he's not going to break. No, they're just going to try something else.
Yeah.
And then they'll try something else.
No, that
and then
makes they'll sense.
Try something else.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is why I know, Emily, you just finished the book. So I'm looking forward to us talking about it, because this is legitimately what Glass Box is about, the entire book.
For those of you who have had the chance to read the Glass Box yet, and again, I'm looking forward to discussing this further with Scott and Emily, we see this exact same tactic used. To me, Nicole, they already know all the names. This has nothing to do with getting information out of Sheridan. This is getting him to cooperate. They already know everyone who's involved in the resistance. They already know Ivanova is the second in command. They already know who all else is involved. And that's not they're not even interested in that at all. What they're trying to do is they're trying to get Sheridan to play by their rules. And it's a power tactic. Nothing more and nothing less. Yeah. You're supposed to feel uncomfortable watching this episode, because if you watch this episode and you come away with happy-go-lucky feelings, then there's something seriously mentally wrong with you, my friend. And another thing I learned from this is, I think probably eventually we need to do a live watch through of Saw with Nicole. I think
that'd
be really entertaining.
No. No. I did watch that movie once. I was forced to, and I was like, it wasn't that bad, but not my cup of tea.
The difference between the Saw franchise and this is this actually has intelligence. And,
yeah.
No, I agree. I don't need torture porn.
Yeah.
The first Saw movie is the only one worth watching.
Okay. Yeah, it's got... It's
because
got
that's the, more psychological
you're
than
right.
it is gore.
Right.
I did see that one, and that one, I was like, damn. Like, that was the only one I ever watched, but after that, I was like, no. But I just had one small comment to say, Justin. Another thing that I thought about, too, I thought maybe, and again, new to torture stuff, don't really watch this kind of stuff, I figured they were letting him know, we know who your people are. We know who your dad is. We know who your second in command. Like, I feel like that was also him asserting dominance and being like, I know who your people are, and like just kind of telling him, I know this.
Well, and it's how the audience reacts to this and Sheridan not breaking. JMS commented on some of that, and he says he intentionally kept Sheridan's lines limited in this, in part so the audience would want to answer for him.
Yeah.
So that was very intentional in the writing too, to kind of connect the audience into what was going on and make them feel for Sheridan in a way.
And we're being tortured right along with them.
Yep.
I mean, and to me, that felt like the entire point of the episode.
Emily.
So this is actually a question for Justin and Nicole. Did you guys think he was going to break?
I don't know. I mean, I know I would have. I also feel like Sheridan is a trained soldier, right? And one of the things that you learn as a soldier is you never break, you never give in, right? You never tell, you never give them what they want, kind of thing. So because of stubbornness and because of his background, I think he'll hold out. I don't think they're going to kill off Sheridan at all. And I don't think they're going to, I honestly, and this could be just me being that disgusting positive person, but I think somehow he's going to get out of it or get saved. I don't know. Something's going to happen, but I don't think he's going to break, or he's going to be on the verge of breaking and someone's going to break him out, or something epic is going to happen. That's what I think.
I don't know if he's going to break. I think he may come out of this a broken man.
But like when you were watching the episode, at any point did you think, oh, this might be where he breaks, or were you just...
I think at that final scene for me was the first and only time that I thought maybe they might get to him and maybe they might convince... I don't know if they'll convince him to do everything that they want him to do, but they may... I think they're going to get to him in some kind of way to where... Yeah, I mean, honestly, do I think that they're going to kill him off? No, because what the fuck are the next 20-something episodes going to be about? So just thinking about it from that kind of perspective.
Speaking of Sinclair, what?
Well, I mean, sure, but...
You never know. There could be a new captain for season 5. You never know.
I don't know. That'd be weird, but it's not the first time that weird shit's happened with this show.
Yeah, and I ask because... That was one of the reasons I struggle with this episode, is because at no point did I think he was going to break, because that wouldn't fit with what we've seen so far. It doesn't fit with, oh my gosh, he went to Zaha Doom, he died. No, he didn't. Like, it, for him to break, it feels like it wouldn't have fit with everything else we've seen. So
it shatters the Messiah complex, basically, if he were to break.
Right. And like that wouldn't fit. Like, I get this was a torture episode, and in many ways it really was to watch it, but I didn't feel that same kind of tension as like Jack the Ripper torturing Delenn. Cause that felt like...
That's fair.
There was a bigger risk of like something really, really bad happening to her, progressively worse. Whereas this, yeah, they're going to do a mind fuck on him, cause that's what they're going to do. That's the whole point. But I never got that same sort of like uncomfortableness that he might actually break. So I felt like for what this episode was, it didn't create the level of tension that I would have expected from a torture episode.
But it's different scenarios though. With the torture of Delenn and comes the Inquisitor, there was no you fail and go about your business. It was, if she was not worthy to the task as the Vorlons deemed it, she would have probably been unalived.
Right.
There's a lot higher stakes in that interrogation, with the Vorlons determining Delenn's worth and even Sheridan's worth to lead the coming fight, versus what this is, where the stakes in this one, yes, they're torturing Sheridan, but Sheridan's not the one that's got anything to lose here. Earth needs Sheridan to be broken. They need him to make the statement. Now, as the interrogator says, there's ways they can fake it. They can do altered video. They could do the mind wipe. They're not ideal, and they would forever leave questions. They're trying to get it done in the way that would leave no questions. Earth is the one that has something to lose here, not Sheridan, like what Delenn and Sheridan had to lose in Comes the Inquisitor.
Right, and that was kind of my issue with the episode, is like, you have this torture episode, and usually episodes based on that are going to be like high levels of tension, and I just didn't get it. Like, I wasn't feeling it.
Mike?
Yeah, I think Emily kind of summed up my feelings about it too. I mean, John is good. John is great. Hooray, John. He has plot armor, and at no point did I ever think that his life was in any actual jeopardy. The other only other point I want to make about the episode or the whole torture storyline is that, you know, I think it's a pretty well known fact that nobody resists torture 100%, like in real life. The the military, the CIA, all those, you know, government agencies, it's known that what you can do is you can train people to mentally resist torture, but everybody breaks it to some degree at some point in time, assuming your torturer isn't sloppy enough that they kill you first. And so to me, what the whole thing kind of summed up to by the end, when they repeat the cycle again, while that's impactful for the viewer to watch, to me, it just mentally registered as, okay, John made it cycle one with his wits about him. He didn't break. It's a matter of time before he does, but it's that matter of time that I guess I just went into it assuming, you know, that will be his salvation in the end. So again, I felt like it was a real lack of real tension in the episode that just made me feel like overall this was a somewhat unnecessary exercise, because they could have come back in a week and found John beat up and bloodied in a hole and pulled him out, like nothing would have been different. So that's all I got to say about it.
The one other thing I wanted to throw out there is, you guys have been talking about a lot in the terms of what would have happened to Sheridan if he had broken this episode. And I think for the most part, it sounds like Justin, Nicole think that he would have been offed. Personally, William says over and over again, I wouldn't lie to you. I have no reason to lie to you. I have no stakes in this. I wouldn't lie to you. He lies to him every single goddamn time, except one time. In my opinion, the one time William says a truth is when he says, we won't kill you right away. We'll parade you around. We will let you travel. It's going to be fun. You get to check out new places, some exotic places. And then when you're no longer needed, it will be quick, it will be painless, and it will probably be when you least expect it. That's the one time William is being truthful. So I don't think his life, if his life was worthless to them, that they could just end it as soon as he signs a confession, they would have just had somebody fake the confession. Or they would have had somebody from PsyCorps come in there and wipe his brain and make him sign it on video, and then they would kill him. So I don't think there's any intention to kill him. I think that is absolutely not what they want to do. So I just want to throw it out there. I think the one thing I like about the William character so much is he is completely duplicitous the entire time. And he comes off as being somewhat, you know, he's a sick son of a bitch, but he comes off as being something a little less than that because he continues to try to ingratiate himself into there.
Yeah. Well, and to jump into that real quick too, I mean, it's exactly like what you were talking about. Like, we've talked about how deepfake technology and all this stuff exists today, and at least Babylon 5 doesn't completely ignore the fact that that kind of technology should exist in Babylon 5's time frame. And as you said, you know, if the only time anybody in the universe ever sees John Sheridan again is through a computer screen, they're always going to question the authenticity of that video. But if Sheridan is left alive and he gets to go gallivant around the universe, creating eyewitness reports that he is in fact still alive, then it makes it a lot harder to doubt the authenticity of his, you know, recanted statement or whatever. So they absolutely want him, they want to break him and let him loose into the universe to spread the tale of his own wrongdoings.
Yeah, agreed. Nicole?
Well, that's kind of why I brought that up earlier, is that flat out told him, you know, you won't be killed right away, but when we don't need you anymore, we will. You'll get to do whatever. But in his mind, this is what I thought, is like, in his mind, that's not really a way for him to live either. So in his mind, he's dead either way, whether it's now or later.
Justin?
Well, and I'm about to make Emily's eyes roll a little bit, but I think part of this, with kind of him finding his strength, I think really started when he was hallucinating Delenn standing there, just like in Zaha Doom, where he came to the realization that Delenn was his reason to live and carry on. I think kind of when he saw Delenn standing there and just kind of looking at him and realized that's the person that he has to resist and stay alive for, I think that kind of was what gave him the strength to finally, you know, be like, you know what, I spit on you, I spit on your ancestors, I spit on your piece of paper, I spit on everything around here, to kind of follow Nicole's, you know, Italian logic of it. But I think that's kind of another reason why their relationship stands so strong, is because she's the reason why he's wants to live and carry on. She's the reason why he's doing everything that he's doing.
Mike?
I feel like we've moved on a little bit from this, but I'll say it anyway, because I think it's maybe worth saying. We need to clarify what is meant by breaking John Sheridan. What Clark's regime is trying to do isn't, their definition of breaking him isn't to get him to read aloud a public statement full of words that Sheridan knows are untrue, because that's not going to ultimately serve their purpose the best way it could. Their ultimate goal of breaking John is to make him believe the words that he's going to read out loud, to make him truly believe that he did do the wrong thing, so that he then goes out into the world, you know, preaching that story to everybody that'll listen. I was the bad guy. I did the wrong thing. I was wrong. Clark was right. So, and kind of hearkening back to the torture tactics deal, you know, one part of this that I think we didn't necessarily touch on too much is the fact that one of those torture tactics is to make you question your own reality. Mm-hmm. It's the whole point of them kind of dicking with his timeline to make him question, well, was it a day ago, or was it yesterday, or is it the same day, or has it been a week? Because once you start breaking down somebody's grasp on what they know to be reality, they start to question themselves, and that leaves room for them to eventually program you into questioning your own decisions and actions and knowledge, so they can reteach it to you. So it all plays into that kind of end game strategy, you know. And so, just to double down on the point, you know, breaking him isn't just to get him to read a statement. Breaking him is to really truly turn him into an agent of the state. And I think the elephant in the room for me a little bit, kind of get the answer, but I'll say it anyway, is why did they have to go through the whole mental torture process instead of just having Sycor blank his memory and reprogram him the way they did Garibaldi or Talon?
Well, and JMS commented on that, because if they would have done that, another telepath would have been able to see through that. And even if Clark controlled Sycor and you weren't necessarily worried about a human telepath, keep in mind there are the rogue telepaths who could have easily, you know, got close enough to scan. But there's also, how many other races have telepaths?
But did anybody see through Talia and her dual personalities?
Even William said it has to be authentic, because if you're ever scanned, they have to see it as authentic. So that's why they can't have another telepath reprogram. I think you're right on that too, Blake.
But if they reprogram them completely with an entirely different personality, then that personality is going to be saying shit that they think is true. It's authentic.
But even with Talia, it was still Lita who was able to send the code that broke the personality. So another telepath was still able to see. And I'm not saying this would be like a normal commercial telepath that could do that. But you take a strong enough telepath, there's going to be signs that that modification was done.
Look what Besser did to Garibaldi. Besser was able to program Garibaldi and then just switch it off in a moment. So then what would stop another telepath from just undoing what Sycor did to Sheridan? So,
and Sheridan's different than Talia. Like, there would be more interest in scanning Sheridan than there was ever going to be in Talia, until there was like, hey, someone's got implanted with like a murder switch and we need to find out who it is. So I do see what you're saying. I just think, because of who Sheridan is and where he falls within this whole plot line, there's a lot more intrigue and interest into who he is and what's actually going on.
Well, and to your point, Mike, I think a better example, even necessarily than Talia, would be is if we go back to Passing Through Gethsemane, where you've got the mind wipes, when that is death of personality. How were they able to undo the death of personality in Brother Edward? It was a telepath, and it was a Centauri telepath who was able to break through those blocks in that mind wipe to go back to the original personality. So I think that would be a more accurate example of what would happen if they did like a wipe and reprogram of Sheridan, is another telepath could get through that or see through that in the same way that they could with the death of personality, like what we saw in Passing Through Gethsemane.
Well, and even to me, like, those aren't permanent either, because even Brother Edward started having problems before the Centauri telepath ever even got to him in the first place. He was starting to have some issues and just a breakdown of the psychological process on his own. So to me, that just tells me that these mind wipes and reprogrammings aren't permanent and they don't last. There's always still some kind of weakness that allows the original personality to come back through, because Edward was having problems on his own long before the deprogramming ever took place.
The telepath came first on that one.
Yeah.
The telepath primed him.
Oh, did it? Okay.
Yeah.
I'm just misremembering. I'm sorry.
Bumped into him in the hallway.
Yep. Well, and I mean, I was prepared to be my own devil's advocate on this. I just figured we need to talk about it. The other part of that is they'd have to remove the other people that already knew Sheridan, because they would be the ones who would see a false personality and raise a lot of questions about it. Like with Brother Edward, I'd actually completely forgotten about the passing through Gethsemane connection to this plot line, but that's exactly what they do there. They wipe that person, but they also relocate them physically to where they should, in theory, never meet somebody that knows who they really are. And that would be impossible with John Sheridan.
Because even would a latent telepath like Susan Ivanova be able to partially break through some of those barriers? You don't think so, Scott?
Psychop level and above to do something.
Would it be?
No.
Okay.
Basically, Ivanova is basically, with her P.5, she's basically an empath. She can kind of sense things. That's about it. I wouldn't even say empath. She can sense when somebody's toying with her. That's about it.
She's like a Dr. Troy type figure.
Yeah, but I even question that, though. I mean, because I've said I'm not even really an empath. I think she can tell when somebody's jacking around her mind. That's about it. Okay, I think we've gone through several rabbit holes with telepaths and torture. So let's go ahead and wrap up this conversation with the newbies by asking them about their questions that they may have remaining after this episode, and then any predictions that they have for what is to come next. And then we will send them out the airlock and come back here a few moments later with our Beyond the Rim segment with the first ones to talk about all these questions and predictions. So let's go to Emily first. Questions and predictions.
I don't really have it much after this episode. No real predictions. This didn't really spark much for me.
Good talk. Thanks. Nicole, questions, welcome. Predictions.
I'm going to give you guys something fun to poke at when you're doing your Beyond the Rim is I predict that something is going to happen and he's going to get broken out or saved or something along those lines, but he's going to survive this. He's not going to break and he is going to get rescued or let go, or something is going to happen where he won't be in their custody anymore.
I don't know what's going to happen. But something bad's
gonna
happen.
You know, but you can laugh at me all you want. Have fun, boys.
You had no questions? That was it? It's gonna be really short Beyond the Rim.
Obviously, my question is he gonna make it? I mean, that's really my only question.
Okay. Justin.
I mean, Nicole kind of stole my shit escalates thunder a little bit, but really the only predictions I have coming out of this is I also agree with Nicole that I think he's going to end up being rescued. And I still stand by my previous prediction from a couple episodes ago, maybe, where I said Garibaldi's going to end up being the one that rescues him somehow. And I'm not 100% convinced they actually have his dad, to be honest with you. Like, they say they have his dad.
Yeah, I don't think they have his dad either.
They say they have his dad. And Garibaldi used it as kind of the carrot to lure Garibaldi, you know, to lure Sheridan to the meeting. Okay, internet, have fun with that. I think that, you know, Garibaldi used Sheridan's dad to kind of lure him to Mars. I don't know if they actually have him. So if they do have him, he's dead. Like, if EarthGov does have Sheridan's dad, he's dead. And that's just going to make Sheridan want to burn the fucking world down. But I'm not convinced they actually have him. And then I guess the only question I have coming out of this is, William talked a lot about how expendable he was. Do we ever find out, or is there anything ever said about what actually happens to William after he failed in his job of trying to get Sheridan to sign that confession? Or was this just all part of the whole plan the entire time of move him to another interrogator and just start the whole process over? So my only question out of this is, does anything happen to William, or does William himself get executed because he failed in his one job?
I hope he does. Is that bad?
It's called poetic justice, Nicole.
So let's unpack this for a moment. Nicole doesn't like torture episodes because she is above us and an innocent summer child.
No, it's not that. It hurts my heart.
Her tummy starts rumbling when she watches torture episodes, but she sure as shit hopes William dies.
Listen,
there's a difference between a quick death and a prolonged torture.
Yes. So. And I also didn't say I didn't like Vengeance. Vengeance is great.
Jesus.
Come on, people now. Smile on your brother. Everybody get
and
together.
Folks, if mental gymnastics were an Olympic sport, we here at Grey 17 would be some fucking gold medalists.
So as long as somebody kills the cow, you'll eat the burger.
I mean, no, I don't even like to do that. That's mean, but I'll eat beef once in a while. Okay. I'm just a softie, okay? My heart's too big. Don't judge me.
I, for one, will shoot the deer, skin it, and eat it. It's delicious.
Hell no.
Kevin, what do you want?
I just want to ask Justin a question. Justin, what would make you think that, you know, this wasn't part of the plan and that the second or third or fourth or fifth guy, if they break Sheridan, wouldn't just get a little bit better performance review? That this is all part of it.
I don't know. I mean, that's why I'm asking you fuckers.
I think it is a legitimate thing, though. I think we as viewers who are not overly sadistic, at least all of us, but Nicole, we want good things to happen to our characters, even if you're not a big fan of the character. So we want this to have an outcome that's going to be a positive outcome. And we want Sheridan to fight the good fight. Personally, I think this was all planned. I think every little bit of this is exactly what they wanted. They have five Williams in the back room, and once we go through a cycle, we bring another one out, another one out.
Oh, that wouldn't shock me at all either.
Oh, absolutely. How else would it work?
Mm-hmm. We're going to need another Timmy.
It just, and sooner or later, he'll start, just like he has the vision of Delenn, he'll start questioning, like, Emily, is that Drazi real? Haven't I seen him die like five times before? The only thing that throws us off is Sheridan's beard. And I wish they hadn't done that, because when you watch this episode, William is, and again, I tell you, I think William lies every goddamn time except for that one. William's the one that comes in and says, hey, it's been another night. We're back for another day. But earlier on in the episode, he said, why do you think it's morning? There's a light outside on the hallway. Why do you think it's morning? I can see this entire torture situation going on for maybe 24, maybe 48 hours, and that's it. And they just cycle through.
You've got a point, Scott, because even William comes in after the whole sandwich episode and says, well, you've just thrown up everything you've eaten in the last 4 days. Well, how do we know it's been 4 days? We don't.
On that happy note of upchucking and diarrhea, let's move on and tell the newbies goodbye for this episode. They'll be back next week when we talk about Between the Darkness and the Light, which, by the way, is episode 19. So yeah. We've only got 4 episodes left. Yeah, right? 19, 20, 21, 22. 4 episodes left in season 4. And then, guys, aside from a couple movies and a couple special stuff, we only have 1 season left.
That's so sad.
We're coming to the end of this thing.
Is it sad, though?
It makes me sad.
Emily's been chopping the whole goddamn episode, so what does she care?
Season 4 has not gone well for me. I had higher hopes than this. Y'all let me down.
Until next week, when we talk about Beyond the Darkness and the Light, I've been Scott, and with me has been
Emily.
Blake.
Mike.
Justin.
Nicole.
And Kevin.
Thank you for listening to Grey 17, a Babylon 5 podcast. You can find all the places to listen to and watch this podcast at anchor.fm/Grey17podcast or youtube.com/Grey17podcast. We want to hear from you, so join the conversation at Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, or Patreon. Be sure to subscribe and leave a review where you are listening to or watching this podcast. Grey 17 is not affiliated with, and the podcast has not been prepared, approved, or licensed by Warner Brothers or any other owners of the Babylon 5 copyright. All clips included in this podcast are the intellectual property of the respective copyright holders. They are included here for purpose of review, and no infringement is intended. The opening and closing themes are available from Falling Matter on YouTube.
And what's out there?
The Rim.
And beyond that?
The truth.
Blake, you alive?
Sure.
Okay.
Just wondering what the fuck's wrong with these people.
Yeah. Well, including Mike, but okay.
Hello, everybody. We were just conversating about how some people have no taste. Welcome back to Beyond the Rim. This is a spoiler section, so if you have not watched past this episode, or if you don't remember what happened past this episode, this is probably where you should check out. If not, we're going to dive into the 5 questions and predictions our newbies had for this episode. But before that, Kevin's got a little bit of stuff he wants to add. So, Kevin, go for it.
So, they did film actually a couple of tidbits, including one in particular where Sheridan does break and JMS didn't want to use it. I guess, you know, there was some quite a bit of discussion between Boxleitner and JMS and some of the crew about he thought it would be more powerful if, you know, there was more question about whether Sheridan was going to break and making it look like he was, and that it would be dramatic if he did break at one point. But JMS didn't feel like it fit with his message of the episode or the series, you know, that, you know, you could say no to the state, that you could resist and you could be strong and win, not necessarily against the state, but certainly against breaking yourself. And I like it better this way myself. But, you know, Boxleitner said quite a bit about this episode, how much he loved filming this one because it really got him to do stuff that he hardly ever gets to do in his career. He, however, didn't love eating four corned beef sandwiches during filming. And he's not a guy who uses a bucket. So he said a few years later, he still hadn't had a corned beef sandwich again.
That's his loss.
I agree.
Yep.
It's almost St. Patrick's Day. Not the same.
Yes, it is.
But it's kind of the same idea. Okay, let's dive into the multiple questions and predictions that we had from our newbies. I was expecting a little more excitement about this episode, although the conversation was great, so it's fine. So is Sheridan going to make it out of the torture?
Of course.
No.
He's dead.
Nope, the rest of the series is just going to be him being tortured over and over again.
I did throw out there, though, it's like it wouldn't be the first time we replaced the captain.
I think everybody knows that this series is still living in the era where everybody has plot armor. I
mean, but we do replace the captain, though. Lockley is coming. We
do, but, like, I don't know. It feels different. It feels different than your Game of Thrones style. Somebody just randomly gets beheaded out of nowhere.
Right, but we are about to lose Marcus, so...
You know, and Ivanova.
And, well, but for different reasons. You know, losing Marcus is, you know, an on-screen death.
Like, by the way, you sick bastard with your next week.
Wait, is it?
It's not next week. This Blake has had a whole, like, plan since you you leaked that Ivanova leaves the show. He's like, well, we'll wait for the episode where she gets blasted to hell, and I'll say that's it. So, that's next week.
That is.
But yeah, good story. Do we know what happens to William?
Nah.
Who cares?
Here's the thing that really will cook your noodle a little bit, though. William's too good at this to just start it under the Clark administration. He's a bureaucrat. I envision William working some black ops site, regardless of who's in charge. So I don't think William's going to lose his job. But maybe I'm a sick bastard.
Or he'll end up in, you know, the Babylon 5 universe equivalent of Argentina.
Yeah, I was just following orders. That's it for questions. Great. So predictions, they don't have Sheridan's dad. That is incorrect. They actually, everything we saw and heard from Garibaldi and Eggers is correct. So Sheridan's dad, David, was on the lam until they figured out that they could track down his medicine. He gets picked up in Chicago, but his wife does continue to be at large until the end of the Civil War. And then David gets released at the end of the Civil War, which we will see in a couple episodes.
I saw where somebody had said about this, that the reason that they didn't use David Sheridan more is because you can only pull at that thread once. And if he resists, or if you have to kill him, then you can't pull at that thread again. And you completely lose all of your credibility, which makes every bit of sense.
Nicole's tarot card reading at the best. Something's gonna happen to help him break out. We don't know what, but something's gonna happen. Although Justin did go one step further and say that Garibaldi will be the one to do the rescue,
confirming once again that he has either watched ahead or has seen the series before.
Well, but it's poetic, though. I think, right. I mean, if you haven't watched ahead and you're thinking, okay, what would be the best poetic way to do this? Okay, the guy who under control was the one who got you captured is the one, once he has broken free, is the one that's going to help find you. And as we see, he's got to do a lot of work to get people to believe him next episode before he does get Sheridan out. But yeah, you're right. I'm not disagreeing with you at all.
I know I'm right.
Just like, poetically, it makes sense. It's better than like Ivanova coming to the rescue or something. I think Garibaldi coming to the rescue makes more sense.
Well, yeah. If it wasn't Garibaldi, then there would really be no way for him to ever come back in any meaningful way in the show. I mean, he would be the guy that scratches at the door and gets kicked aside week after week, and that would be that. So
can I come in?
He's got to do something good and something redeeming, or else there'd be no point.
The last thing I wanted to bring up real quick, and Justin kind of alluded to already, so that's why I didn't talk about it much on the other side, is that this really does feel like a Twilight Zone episode to me, which is why I really like it. I really enjoy when you stick two actors in a room and have them bounce off each other. But for me, the most Twilight Zone-y episode that we have coming is coming up in a few weeks with Deconstruction of Falling Stars, which I'm fairly sure most of our newbies are going to hate. But that is my second favorite episode of the season, so we'll see how that goes.
I think Justin will like it.
I think he will. I think you're right. I think you're right.
I think Jesse will, too. I think Emily and Nicole are going to.
I'm not a fan of that episode either.
Oh, good. I'll make fun of you then. That'd be fine. Okay, well, we'll be back here next week to discuss Between the Darkness and the Light. And again, we've only got a few episodes left. For those who have watched ahead, how we're going to do this is we're going to do the next four episodes. We're then going to do the B5 movie in the beginning, and then we'll do our season four recap. So just be aware that we've got four episodes of season four, then we've got one more movie to go through, and then we'll do our live season four recap here in 5 weeks, 6 weeks, whatever that comes out to be. So we'll be chatting with you throughout that, and if you can, please join us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or if you can really help us out, you can go to our Patreon and join our Discord. That way, any pledge to the Patreon gets you on the Discord. And if you are listening to the podcast, please be sure to like and add a review. And if you're watching on YouTube, please be sure to like, subscribe, and click that notify button as well. And we'll see y'all next week. Until then, I've been Scott, and with me has been
Blake,
and Kevin.
Maybe the shortest Beyond the Rim episode ever, and I'm okay with that. Excellent.
Our listeners will love it if they even stay that long.
You will cooperate with the state for the good of the state and your own survival. You will confess to the crimes of which you have been accused. You will be released and returned to society a productive citizen if you cooperate. Resistance will be punished. Cooperation will be rewarded.
No.